So today's talk is Emscripten, transpiling C and C++ to JavaScript and HTML5. Pretty technical talk. I got a lot of this from one of the engineers at Mozilla, Alan Sakai, and I was completely engrossed in this when I first learned about how this worked. So my goal now is to try to share this with the community so people can also start to adopt a lot of this. My name is David Boyles. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft, which is best described as a developer who talks to developers. Based out of here in Philadelphia, so I never come to this office. I live about 30 minutes away, but I spend most of my time at home. We do have an innovation center opening in University City about the next 8 weeks, and that's essentially a small free co-working space available for anybody, regardless of which size of the company you're working in. If you want to come in and learn how to do HoloLens, Xbox, Band, any kind of development like that, I'd be more than glad to help you out. So that'll be my new headquarters, and we'll have all that hardware there for you, too. You can always find my stuff, myname.com, daveboyles.com, my Twitter handle is the same. So let's get started. Emscripten. Have any of you used Emscripten before? All right. Have you heard of Emscripten? Okay, a few people. Awesome. Yeah, it's still relatively new, but I'll show you how some larger companies use this in production today. So JavaScript is standards-based and the only language that runs in all web browsers. Right? So this is even on mobile devices that you have in your hands, obviously. You can only run JavaScript in browsers, but you can write in another language if you compile it down to JavaScript. So everything compiles to LLVM bit code, and LLVM, which we can then turn into JavaScript. So LLVM is low-level virtual machine. At least that's largely what it used to stand for. It's a library used to construct, optimize, and produce IO, or intermediate code, intermediate binary machine code. Basically taking other languages and converting it down to code that'll work everywhere. So used as a compiler framework where you provide the front end, that's things like Clang, which is a parser and a lexer, and you can give it a back end, and that's the compilation target that you want to aim for. In this case, we're just using JavaScript as a compilation target like we would for anything else. So instead of some people might target x86, x64, ARM processors, all we're doing now is saying, we're going to take LLVM and everything that comes with this project, and we're going to use Clang on the front end, and on the back end, they're popping in Emscripten. So this was started at, not at Mozilla, but by an individual, Alan Sakai, who got hired later on to become a researcher, and now it's his main project, is how do we get this JavaScript, or this C and C++ code, to work everywhere. So LLVM used all over the place. In 2005, Apple started using it for their tools as well. I used to have a really good slide here. I don't know what I did with it. Essentially, look at LLVM as like a tool chain. So LLVM sits in the middle, and on the input side, you can have a front end. Like I said, you can take languages like C and C++, pop it in, and all Mozilla's doing is adding the back. So I say all, but really there's a lot going on in the hood here. So native code, as we know, has a lot of its own purpose, and performance, namely. A lot of my background comes from game development, and I'm really, really fascinated at how people were able to get so much out of older hardware. You look at things like the NES, Nintendo Entertainment System. It came out in 83, but really the hardware was from like 79, 80, using an aging processor. But people, especially in the mid-90s, like right as it was going out, they were able to get as much performance as possible out of that thing, especially when you consider how slow and small the processor was. So performance has always been something I'm actively trying to go after. How do I get the most out of something? And today, we have these mobile devices that are incredibly fast. Right? The phone in your pocket is stronger than the device that you use to land people on the moon. So when you really put that in perspective, you have to understand, like, how are some people's web pages struggling to load, and that same device that landed people on the moon has less power? So, it's not that native code is the right or wrong answer, but there's a use case for everything. So native code has perks, but so does rapid testing and sharing. So with native code, you've got to build, compile this whole project, wait for it to happen. We know what happens as soon as you go to compile a project. You flip over to Wikipedia or YouTube or something, and the build might have taken 30 seconds, but your mind is off wandering for the next 10 minutes. But with something like JavaScript, we can just transpile, that is the art of converting from one language to another, to JavaScript, and just share a URL. So I can take this link and I can drop it into a tweet and then have someone look at my work immediately. Practical use case, even a couple of days ago for the 30th anniversary of Legend of Zelda, someone had rewrote the game, at least large portions of it, in WebGL using a voxel engine. This thing took off like wildfire. So someone shared it with me, I put it on Twitter, next thing I know I have dozens of retweets. I'm like, man, I never get any love, but today I'm just sharing someone else's work. But that was wild to see how fast people could do this.
You didn't have to download it, did you?
No, but yeah, it's still in the web archive.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, because I know Nintendo yanked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Nintendo grabs stuff like the moment something happens. That place is still old school in many ways. They don't even want you live streaming their games, as weird as that sounds. So, you know, they pulled it down immediately. But for the few hours that it was up, people were sharing this like mad. So I used it on my desktop. I went down to go pick up my little guy from the school bus, and I'm starting on my phone and showing him. So I don't have to download, or I have to download the game, but I don't have to download the whole thing. I don't have to install anything. I'm not worried about which platform it's running on, but I can take this experience with me as I go from my apartment over to the school bus and way back. That, there's a lot to be said about that, and about how easy it is to share some of these experiences. And again, this is nothing new in some regards. Right, we look at things like C#, Python, Java, TypeScript, Microsoft's own open source language, all transpile to JavaScript. PyJS, done Python, JSIL with C#. JSIL, really cool project done by Caitlin Gadd, which takes a lot of XNA games, those were C# games of Microsoft's XNA framework, and poured them over to the browser. Games like Scapegoat, which is now on PS4. So it's neat to see a lot of these games that are built for consoles are able to just be ported to the browser very, very quickly. Even Java had it with called WIT or Google Web Toolkit. I don't think it's very active anymore though. So why now? Right? What was stopping us from doing anything like this before? Largely had to do with non-standardized approaches, things like ActiveX, you know, Microsoft's guilty of it with things like Silverlight, Flash, Alchemy, all had limited success in the past, right? These are non-standard things we're trying to usher into the browser. We've got a download plugin, which we know can have a number of issues, right? Security, sometimes performance can be hit or miss. Support, is that browser even going to support this type of application? So now, fortunately, with plugins inside of HTML5 standards, as I mentioned before, they just didn't really get widespread adoption. And it really weren't going to work on corporate networks. Like, if you try to run something like that here in Microsoft Office, it's just not going to happen. So both for technical and non-technical reasons. Also, you look at things like Flash. Flash was fantastic when it came out. It was also a battery drain, a huge security flaw. So people didn't want this running on mobile devices. And Apple put the kibosh on it several years ago, largely with the launch of iOS. In the Steve Jobs book by Walter Isaacson, there's a really good bit of information about the battle between Apple or Adobe and Apple, largely Steve Jobs kind of going back and forth about that. So if you want to know more about the insights, that'd be a great place to start. So besides, all those things are on their way out. So here's what I mean. No plugins for iOS developers, Google Nixes. I think NPAPI is how you pronounce this. I'm not really sure. And here's a link to an Ars Technical article from last year. April of last year. Chrome starts pushing Java off the web by disabling plugins. So we were getting this native performance, but it came with a lot of trade-offs. That's great, right? Standards. JavaScript is a standard, so why not compile to that? And in the past, right, JavaScript has gotten a really bad reputation, understandably so. When I worked at Comcast, I had a really, really good and very technical coworker who would say, JavaScript, built in 10 days so we could suffer for the next 20 years. And it was 20 years old this year, or last year. My mind kind of blends together with all this. But Brandon Eich, who was one of the heads at Mozilla for some time, built this in JavaScript for Netscape Communicator. So we could have interactivity within the browser some 20 years ago. But he had to just get this thing out the door very quickly. And it's interesting to see him give talks on why he implemented certain features and did things a certain way. But the language as a whole has really started to grow in the last decade or so. Even Microsoft started to recognize this, and you see some 10, 12, almost 15 years ago, there was work, there may not have even been an IE team. Things kind of like put the brakes on. Everyone's going not the way of the web, but the opposite direction. Compiled applications, native apps on every platform. And now I think a lot of us realize that the web is where everything is going. But I can write an application, and not have to focus on just your Android device, just your iOS device, just Windows. If you compile for the web, it's going to work all over the place. So one example, gaming on the web. I mentioned gaming is my background, my passion. But also a large reason I highlight games is because of the performance required. Some people tell me, I want to write a line of business app. So that's great, but you're probably not going to need the performance that games are really starting to do. Right? They've been pushing things and hardware to the limits for years. There's even a thing called the demo scene, which is fascinating. Started in the 80s, got really popular in the early 90s. The idea behind the demo scene is it's groups of developers who get together to create demos, right? High-performance demos using archaic hardware. So people might try to write, use assembly and Pascal and Scala and all these older things to try to push this hardware to the limits. And so it's been gamers, or game developers for decades, been trying to push everything as much as we can for this. So that's why people often highlight games. If it works for games, it'll work just about anywhere else. So experience with a typical game. So I go to a platform-specific store, we'll say Steam, right, the most popular PC store. I have to log in or create an account, usually create an account first, find the game, purchase it, download it, install it, patch it, and then play it. So there is, we'll say, a reasonable amount of barrier to entry to getting any of this done. Experience with web games. Go to my website, launch the game. Like that, there is way less friction there. And everything that we're having to compete with today, right? So when you're creating a game on your application or on your device, you're not just competing with other games in that platform. Right? You're competing against everything for my time. When I get home, am I going to read a book, watch TV, spend time with the other kids? You know, these are the things that are taken from your time. But particularly with mobile devices, you've got to look at it. Your mobile device is often used as a way to fill the voids.
Your camera's going to skew.
Yeah. If you could just turn it a little bit. You have to dance with that thing for a little bit.
I will be the star of your presentation. Is it good?
As long as it stays.
Oh, it's the cable.
No, it's fine. As long as it stays. Yeah,
no,
like
it's
that,
not staying. It's moving.
It's not going to.
Oh, well.
I was just totally watching it turn.
Yeah, the cable's like tight, so.
You want the extension?
I think
that's
it might be.
Don't breathe.
No, that's okay. I don't mind. That's good. Like, what happens is actually I record the screen, I record the audio, record a bit of myself, and I just kind of like blend myself in from time to time, not too much, just so people aren't looking at slides the whole time if they go to watch this in the future. But I appreciate it. And thanks for pointing that out. So you can go to a website and just play a game and you're ready to go. So your mobile device, you're competing with someone's time. You're trying to fill the void. I'm end up playing most of my games and doing my reading. I'm standing in line for the supermarket, or maybe someone stopped at a traffic light, or you're sitting on the couch, not really paying attention. So those are when people are really spending time doing most of these games. You're hopping on the bus or the train. I used to commute to Manhattan every day on the subway. And those are when people are using these games. So you gotta think, what are these bite-sized experiences that I can come up with? You're not necessarily limited to that either. So first, let's look at the language, JavaScript as a whole. So, oh, wow, this stinks. You know what?
I realized I was not recording this the whole time. You've got to always hit it twice, and part of it flashes, part of it doesn't. It's cool. I'll have to blend the audio together at this point. It'll be funky, but. So JavaScript then and now. So JavaScript began as a slow interpreted language, right? For sure, very familiar with this. Right? Windows Internet Explorer stopped running the script. A script has stopped, has had some kind of error. We can't keep advancing. What are we going to do now? So it was implicit, statically typed code in JavaScript, just like the competition. That's what we have available today. So back then, it was all dynamic. Today, we have some ways of working around this, right? We can essentially coerce our JavaScript to be what the type that we want it to be. So here I have a very simple addition function. So I'm passing in two variables, A and B, and I'm setting A to A and B to B, but I also have that little bracket there with zero. So we look at it as a pipe. So what this is doing is actually turning this into an int 32. So generally, JavaScript only has double precision floating point numbers, or accuracy at least. Well, now I can tell it, well, I actually want you to return this value instead, right? That's what I'm asking for. And you'll see in a lot of high performance frameworks, so things like WebGL, they will use this all over the place to tell it, okay, this is more performant and this is the size that I need. Don't take up any more space than necessary. this is what I want returned. So now we have little hacks and tips and tricks that we can do to coerce these different types. And now we also have ASM.js, short for assembly JavaScript. Are any of you familiar with this? Okay. We have a side-by-side standard also coming out. Say we, I mean the web development world, called WASM, WebAssembly. So slightly confusing. I'll let you look up the article on that from Brandon Eich. It's very, very new. And the idea is these two are going to work in tandem together for the near future. At some point, they'll kind of fork off and do their own thing. But the idea is you can get highly optimized performance subset of JavaScript running inside the browser. So this is still JavaScript. It's just highly optimized. You could write it yourself, although it's not all going to come out exactly as you'd hoped, and it could be a little bit of work to get it done, especially when you see all the hacks and things you have to do. So this is largely led by Mozilla, and specifically the gentleman I mentioned before, Alon Zakai and Luke Wagner. So the principal benefit of ASM over new technologies like Pinnacle is that existing JavaScript engines already optimize this style of code quite well. So this will work all over the place. Not in every browser just yet, but we have support for it in Edge, Chrome, as well as Firefox. And now mobile browsers are slowly getting there too. So imagine JavaScript, but without all the cruft and the slow performance. I don't think I have it listed in here, but JavaScript's also single-threaded, which again is a gift and a curse. If you had to write code with multiple threads, it can be a bit hectic sometimes, you know, race conditions and things like that to compete with. But with JavaScript, you have one thread, and that's the UI thread that you're hanging on the entire time. But you're not necessarily limited because you can also use things like the graphics card, which I'll go into shortly, that allows you to get more performance out of this, what was previously a very weak language. So ASM.js overview. So I have C# listed on the site on the left-hand side here, and that's because Unity, the popular middleware tool, largely used for game engines but can be used for simulations and all kinds of other things, can take C#, they convert it to C and C++. They have their own tool chain for this. I forget what it's called off the top of my head. They inline a lot of their code and convert it to C and C++. For some reason, it's blanking on me right now. Then they use LLVM, and I'll show you exactly how they do this shortly. Use LLVM, run it through the emscripten toolchain, and spits out assembly JavaScript. So here's game code that you can write in C#, and in the end, you hit a button, and it spits it out to the browser for you. Even better, that same code, that identical code base, can be used for consoles, PCs, mobile devices, wherever you want it. Unreal Engine, made by Epic Games in Raleigh, North Carolina, they do the same thing. Their code is C++, and they can get this great performance out of it too. So emscripten started in 2000, so it's open source using the MIT and LLVM license. I had first discovered this or learned about it when I went to the GDC, the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco. This was 3 or 4 years ago. I went into a talk on that Epic Game, or no, Mozilla was doing. So I see them on stage, and they're talking about games. I'm curious to see, like, how's HTML5 taking off with games in, like, 2011, 2012? I'm sitting for this talk, and the folks from Epic Games come up. I'm thinking, why is a game studio sitting there with Mozilla? Okay. And they showed off, hey, we have this, their code base, and at that time, their previous engine, UDK, Unreal Development Kit, was their gameplay code was all created with a scripting language called Unreal Script, very similar to Java. So you'd write Unreal Script, and it got it working inside the browser too. Like, blew the gaming world away when you saw that you could take all this code and get it working inside the browser and with great performance. So I mentioned before, LLVM, or emscripten is built on LLVM. So Clang, C++ front-end, LLVM optimizer. And you have things like the libc++ standard library, and then you have a low-level library for C++ support if you really got to get down to the hardware. So Clang supports nearly all C++ features, so emscripten, by nature of it, does as well. So exception handling does take some work. All right, here we go. So this is kind of small, but I have a little function up here, so just returns type void, and I have a little try catch inside of there. So in C++, that's how I'd write it. In JavaScript, it looks like I have a lot more going on here. I really just have a big comment is what it comes down to. So they can call a function pointer, checking for a throw. And this, it's kind of hard to explain here without me diving back and forth into code, which I don't have on this machine at this point. So I'll leave these slides up for now so you can dive into this code a little bit later. But this void operator essentially allows you to produce the side effects in places where an expression that evaluates to undefined is desirable. So I want to obtain the underlying primitive value. I can use this void type and it'll return the pointer. So here's like the runtime functions that InScripten carries with it that allow you to do a lot of these things. So I should say, C++ exceptions, using JavaScript exceptions. So it does provide things like stack unwinding, so you can go back and see like where you're having issues with some of your code. It's never going to be fun to debug, but some of the tools are getting better by the day. So what about other libraries? You probably don't want to write all this C++ by hand, or I should say this JavaScript by hand. So we have things like SDL, that's Simple Direct Media Layer, an open source project that allows you to essentially scaffold a lot of your C and C++ code so you can get it running on a number of platforms. Right? You don't want to have to go through the work of building a window every single time and handling how the application quits. So SDL will build a lot of that for you, and a lot of popular games are built on top of SDL as well. Frameworks too. So SDL and OpenGL are implemented in JavaScript in the web already via different APIs. So we have things like Bullet, which is a physics framework. We have Box2D, which is a 2D physics framework. You can use Python, Lua. We have other scripting options, Ruby. You have a compression algorithm through zlib. So a lot of these things people have already created inside the browser for you. So there's no need for you to go back and reinvent the wheel. So a lot of people would think, okay, I want to use C and C++, but what if that framework or library does not exist? Well, I would take a look at it first and see if the JavaScript equivalent already exists inside the browser, or if there's some way I can include it inside of my project. So sounds great so far. I mean, like I said, exception handling can be kind of a bit of an issue, but this is definitely not without its limitations. So I got to tell you the good parts. I also have to tell you the bad parts. So we're looking at things like 64-bit integer math will not work. Just an issue of the language. JavaScript does not support 64-bit math, at least with integers. No multi-threading with shared state. So I'd mentioned threads before. JavaScript, single-threaded. And there are ways that people are trying to get around single-threading in JavaScript, right? You have service workers, which will at least simulate multi-threading, but you're just not able to share the state back and forth because of the way you have to message between threads in JavaScript. And finally, no Direct3D support. Direct3D is Microsoft's 3D graphics library available through DirectX, our, we'll say, a gaming framework. So it'll only have support for OpenGL, hence the WebGL support inside of the browser. But if you're writing a game for Android, for iOS, you're already using OpenGL or the web, the mobile variant, OpenGL ES, to begin with. So debugging. So I mentioned before, it's the problem in general with compiling for the web. Source maps, right, can help a little bit, but at the same time, your best bet is to start with your C and C++ code, because when this ASM gets spit out, you're going to be looking at really optimized JavaScript code. You're not going to be looking at the code that you wrote. Again, a source map will show you some of the C and C++ code that you wrote inside of there, but your best bet is always to take a look at your C and C++ first. So how does this work? There's no Jedi mind tricks here. So I've got numeric types. So LVM. So 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit integers and floats and doubles. JavaScript, we have a double precision floating point number. So we build for a 32-bit target as well, because 64-bit integers cannot all fit into doubles. But a 32-bit one can. So what about performance? So we look at LLVM. Types and operations map roughly one-to-one with the CPU. We don't have garbage collection to worry about, that kind of overhead. RAII offers predictability, so that's resource acquisition and initialization. So it's things like our constructor, our destructors. But with JavaScript, right, we have the virtual machine we've got to worry about, the JavaScript virtual machine that's running inside all of your browsers. So that has a bit of overtime you've got to be concerned with. And also JIT, just-in-time compilers with type profiling. So what that means is with a compiled language, you know, or statically typed language, you know the types, right, as soon as that thing gets compiled. As it's starting to build that project, it's going to say, whoa, you're trying to pass in a float here, but you told me I need an integer as the type. I'm going to put the brakes on, throw an exception, or throw an error when trying to compile. JavaScript, it has no idea. It's just hoping for the best and trying to look ahead and optimize for what you're doing. And even worse, it'll try to optimize, and then when it gets there, that just-in-time part, you may have changed the value of what it thought should have been there, right? So it'll optimize, it'll quickly get there in real time, so as you're doing this through the JavaScript runtime, it'll get there and it'll realize, oh man, I optimized the wrong way, let's go back a little bit and redo this. So you can have some overhead with JavaScript. I don't say this to frighten you, I just want you to be aware of how a lot of this is working. So two very different issues with compiled code versus something like JavaScript, which is all just runtime. You are actually compiling JavaScript. That's how, what is the word I'm looking for? It's been a while since I've given this talk. I'll look it up shortly. Maybe I have it in here. No, I don't. Yeah, I'll look up the word I'm looking for shortly. It has just slipped my mind. Oh, you also have things like garbage collection. Like I said before, C and C++, you're managing this yourself. Where JavaScript, you can't even coerce the garbage collector to go, right? You just got to do your best to not create garbage and reuse types as much as possible. So building. So C++, right? You need to recompile for each CPU and operating system. x86, 64, ARM. JavaScript, one build to rule them all. Right? So having a single build does prevent some optimizations, though. So variables in JavaScript, local variables have functional scope. JavaScript, local variables have functional scope as well. All right. So we have something. We're on the same page, slightly. The languages kind of overlap a little bit there. But then what about security concerns, right? So applications must ship their own system libraries. So Scripton fakes a file system to make porting easy for now. And by this I mean the JavaScript project cannot assume that you have a lot of these libraries already on your device. Therefore, your packages in some instances may be a little larger, and then you'll have to include a lot of these system libraries. So some of this can be beneficial though, right? So the JavaScript stack is managed and unobservable or unmodifiable by executing code, right? So that means once it's there, it's there. But compiled C++ is immune to some types of buffer overflow stacks. So overflow attacks, I should say. So there are benefits to having to compile some of this JavaScript. Some more speed. So loads in LLVM, intermediate representation, become reads from typed arrays. So that's binary data inside of the browser in JavaScript, which become reads in machine code. So essentially, what you're going to do here, if you're going to read and write objects or documents inside of JavaScript, is you're going to create a variable here called float 64 array. And that's the exact type that I have. You're going to create a large chunk of space or memory that you can store whatever you want inside of there. And that's how you're going to read a lot of this data with mscripten. So again, JavaScript doesn't really have a file system, so we've got to kind of mimic this and fake this the best that we can. Some of my notes, again, it's been like 3 or 4 months since I've given this talk. So JavaScript typed arrays are array-like objects and provide a mechanism for accessing raw binary data. And that's how we're going to be getting some of the speed out of there. So something like C++, you can just look at a pointer and go directly to that value. You don't have to copy everything over. And that's essentially what we're trying to do here, is figure out how can we get back and forth to a lot of this data without having to copy the entire thing over and over. So as a result, typed arrays perform a lot better than JavaScript arrays for passing data to WebGL and other APIs that deal with large bits of binary data. So why do this, right? Why would anyone want to take their compiled application, which already runs really fast and runs great inside of, you know, your iOS, Android, your desktop thing? So I'll get to that point in a little bit. So the first is you want to circumvent the app stores, okay? So you want to push updates, just update your web app, right? I don't have a picture here, but in my last talk earlier today, I talked about Manifold.js and Vorlon.js, which is a way of essentially creating a wrapper a native wrapper around a website so you can take your web app and turn it into a native mobile application on a number of platforms. And a picture I'd highlighted was, if you're going to push an app to the iOS App Store today, for iOS, it's going to be 6 days. For OS X, you have an 8-day wait period. What that means is I submit my application today, Apple's got to vet it, make sure there's nothing malicious and bad going on over there, and then my application will go to the store. That's great, but what happens if I have to update my application in the future? Same thing, I'm waiting 6 days to get that patch there. So not so bad, because I'm hoping my users are, they're patient. But what happens if I submit an update or an add-on, some DLC to my application, downloadable content, and I have a bug in one line of code? Well, the entire time that bug is there, I'm getting downvoted, maybe 1 star, you know, half a star, and people have all kinds of nasty comments. Once they're there, those are there, and you're going downrated into oblivion. So I quickly realize the issue, I correct that one line of code, I go to push, how long do I have to wait? 6 days. About 6 days, my application's going away. And we know it's difficult to get seen on the front of that app store. But if I have something like this, right, I can have a wrapper around my application, or I can point people towards my app, my website. As soon as I push that code, right, I can have my GitHub account talking to my Azure website. I can just, boom, push that code, and it's updated instantly. Instantly. That's a huge benefit of going this route. My employees, my people playing my games do not have to wait this long period of time. Other part, download just parts of the app, stream the rest. So I look at Star Citizen here. Star Citizen, not out yet. Who knows if it's ever going to come out. So it's right, very, very expensive game. I think it's the most successful Kickstarter of all time. They raised over $100 million to create this game. It was done by something Roberts. I always forget his name. Essentially, it made these games in the 80s and 90s called Wing Commander. Really, really popular series. Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, starred in a lot of these games. And he just said, you know, we're going to go out, we're going to recreate this for like a modern audience. So I started to do this, and recently I said, well, the game, when it's done, it's going to be more than 100 gigabytes of information. Now me, I have awesome Comcast connection at home. I get 150 down, so this might take me a couple hours. Not so bad. But I think of my friends who are working in games who are in Australia, right? They are limited to how much they can download, and their speeds are very, very slow. 100 gigabytes, like, that's not happening. They're not getting this game. I look at something like Age of Ascent. Did any of you watch Build we had a couple weeks ago? So Age of Ascent, created by a studio called Illyriad Games. I had them on my podcast, Indie Dev Podcast, about a year ago. I saw their talk at Tech Ready about a year and a half ago, and it blew my mind. Studio of about 7 people, and what they're doing is creating this WebGL game inside of the cloud. It's all hosted through Azure, and they can have hundreds of thousands of people play this space shooter at the same time. To go start playing this game, you go to their website, it'll give you the launcher so you can initialize the game. The launcher is 50 megabytes. It just starts giving you the bare minimum of what you need, and then just starts streaming the data that you need to get going. Right? I don't need that big boss ship at the end of the game that I probably won't see if I ever get to. It might take me 80 hours to get there. Probably not ever going to get there. So why give me that content? You're taxing your servers, you're taxing my servers, or my device, you're killing my bandwidth. So I'll just give you what you need, and best of all, you can cache it locally so you don't have to keep downloading this content over and over. So keep it. So I've had a few people say things like, I brought this up on Stack Overflow, which is both the best and worst thing in the world. And people say, well, I don't want to download a 60 megabyte website. And that is absolutely a good question to ask. 60 megabyte website. That's huge. How many of you use Netflix? A few people. How about YouTube? Okay, right? So when you go watch Netflix at home, do you think, wow, I just downloaded a 10 gigabyte website. That is crazy. That's exactly what you did. The website, the frame itself is 3 megabytes, but all the video data they're sending out, especially if you're using some of the 4K content like House of Cards, that is massive. Do you look at that as you're downloading a 10 gigabyte website? Probably not. So look at this the exact same way. It's an interactive experience. And best of all, if you want to cache it, you can cache it. And distribution sources, through sources other than the curated app stores. Curation, both a gift and a curse. So now, this is how we can get around a lot of it. Maybe I'll have just a sample of this game on my website, right? I might tweet this out to a bunch of people or throw it on Reddit and say, hey, check this out. Let me know what you think. People play through 5 or 10 minutes of it. And at the end, it says, hey, go here to get more. Or perhaps I include a download code for a discount. Hey, you played through this game. Here's a good for a one-time code to get it half off Steam. Right? Great way to keep user engagement and thinking outside the box on a lot of this. So you can reach, reach people, more people, get them to your website. And something I deal with a lot, I take like a lot of pitches when I'm doing work in Philadelphia with startups and VCs, and someone might say, I got 100,000 downloads. So, that's great, 100,000 downloads. How many people opened up that application though, right? Maybe 10% of them, so 100,000, now it's only down to 10,000 people, right? How many of those got past the first level or signed up or whatever it is you're looking to do? Here, we're trying to make it as frictionless as possible. So browser support, where is ASM supported? So some of my favorite site, caniuse.com. How many of you are using this? All right. So what can I use? What this allows you to do is type in any browser feature and see which of your favorite browsers supports this. So I did this talk, I think I built it in December. I just typed in ASM.js and you can see IE does not support it. And IE, we're not updating that anymore. Whatever's in there now, that's what's remaining. Edge is where we're going. So Edge has support, Firefox has support. Chrome, it says yellow. I'm not quite sure because it seems to work pretty fine in there. Safari, I recently read an article from Ars Technica that said, is Safari the new IE? I'll let you decide. Safari, no support. Opera, I know some people are thinking like, Opera, who cares? Like, we're not really using it here. You know where it's huge? Asia. Massive market over there. Yep. So it has support in a bunch of these devices. Like I said, mobile, still not quite there, but you give it some time, especially if it already has widespread adoption on the desktop. So let's look at how we're going to build some of these projects. Here is a native executable. So here's my hello.cpp. Very simple project. So I just have standard cout, hello world, right? And once I have this project, I'm just going to compile the C++ application and run the output. And it's just going to say, hello world, right? Return a string. So that's how I do it if I'm going to do it in C++. So compiling with some script in, so EMCC, I'm going to say, hey, I already have this same code. I'm not changing it. But I'm going to say hello.cpp, and I'm going to use Node.js here. And she's going to say, I use Node essentially as a web server to spit this out. Take this C++ and convert it to HTML. So with Emscripten, I can spit out JavaScript files, HTML files. And here's what it would look like. So I'm using Edge in this case. And Emscripten will give me a little shell, a wrapper. That's what we see everything over here. And I have Hello World running inside of my browser. So nothing has changed here. I wrote the exact same C++ code. Granted, it's very simple. I'm just using nearly the same exact compiler toolchain that I was doing before. So generating code. So the target file name extension defines the output type. So I do .js if I want JavaScript, .html if I want HTML and C++ or JavaScript. And if I just want bit code, I do .bc. It makes it portable so I can bring it everywhere. So EMCC, and I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I've done this. If you want to compile for C++, I think I have to use I think if I want to do this on Linux and OS X, I think I have to use EMCC Plus or EMCC Plus. I have it on my website, so it's been a little while. So essentially, it's a drop-in replacement for GCC or Clang. So you saw before, not really having to change anything. I'm just changing the target that it's going to. So keep your normal build system and just plug in EMCC. So you know, you're probably thinking, how do I get this code to communicate, right? I might have an awesome C++ app, but what if I have some functions or a debug library, something like that in JavaScript that I want to communicate to? What if I have some JavaScript that I want to be able to send messages to that compiled C++ application? There's a number of ways. So I can call compiled C functions from normal JavaScript. A number of ways to do it here. I can call compiled C++ classes from JavaScript using bindings. And I can call JavaScript functions from C and C++. So I've just given you a number of ways to do this. So don't say it's not possible. But and I've done some of these through my website. So I have a tutorial for typing my name plus some script in. I have a long tutorial on how all this works, step-by-step instructions, and more video. So there's a number of ways that you can get your code, C, C++, and JavaScript, all interoperable and talking back and forth. So why not just turn your JavaScript code into assembly JavaScript? Someone had asked this on Stack Overflow. So runtime type checking takes time. So in C++ and C, you're not really doing this. But in JavaScript, right, we have the JIT, just-in-time compilation. That takes time. So as soon as it gets to these types, it's got to figure out, OK, is this what you told me it should be? All right, it is. We can keep going. So JavaScript can't really be compiled to ASM.js and offer much of benefit because of the dynamic nature, right? So with C and C++, I know the types as this project is getting built. Therefore, I can optimize along the way, or at least MScripten is going to do that for me. With JavaScript, because everything is dynamic, nothing static there, it has to infer along the way. So if you did try to take this and turn it into optimized JavaScript, you're not getting any benefit, right? You're not going from static language to a dynamic one. You're staying dynamic the whole time. So it's just trying to figure this out. So why not? Okay, and also in statically typed languages, actually I just mentioned this before, the compiler knows the type of each object when it's being compiled. So the offline experience. So app cache. I do quite a bit with app cache. It works very, very well for me. I said in my previous talk, did anyone come to the one I did in Vorlon and Manifold? Okay. I'd mentioned app cache there. I was creating a video game for the browser. I ported it from 68K assembly to JavaScript, which surprisingly works well. And I had these large video files I was serving to people from Azure. So blob storage, very cheap, but I don't want to keep serving you the same video files over and over, especially as you play through this game several times. So what I can do is I can use app cache, and I can tell it, hey, do not continue to send this person the same video. Instead, keep it cached on their device. And your browser has a limit to how much it can cache. Up to a certain threshold, it's different for each one. I can ask for permission. So I can say, with a little pop-up, hey, I might need 100 megabytes of space to store this information. Is that okay with you? You give me permission, and I can store more. So what I often do with these games that I was making is I would store the video on your device, and it's there until two things need to happen. Either the next time you go to my website in this app cache file, it's an XML file, I'll say, do not cache the images, do not cache the CSS, but cache the video. If I make a change to that XML file at any point, that app cache, the next time you go to load that site, it's going to disregard everything it saw before. Or if you go to clear the cookies inside of your browser, clear your cache, it's going to download all of that content again. But one of the huge benefits that I saw for my testing was obviously bandwidth, much less we're having to use. But for a lot of these games where I was largely using video to send this content, it was snappy, right? It's not having to make a network request to go out and get the content and come back. Instead, it's just reading it right from the hard disk. IndexedDB, so local database of records holding simple values and hierarchical, I can't pronounce this, it's too late for me, objects, hierarchical, yeah, objects. So essentially a key value pair for storing information inside of the browser. Both of these work very well. And service workers. So if you try to use app cache inside of Firefox, I use three browsers at once as I'm testing. Largely because you discover all of the bugs that are built inside of there. I'm looking at Chrome's terrible video handling. That's largely why I stopped making that game, was because Chrome, the most widely used browser, doesn't... the way they load video into RAM is kind of odd, and just if you try to load the same video twice without refreshing the page, it chokes and it just says, there's an exception and you can't do anything. So the joys of working within the browser. So service workers, if I try to use app cache inside of Firefox, it'll actually say, oh, app cache is becoming deprecated. I don't know where they got this from. Use service workers instead. Look on, can I use? Service workers are not anywhere to be found. So I don't know. I'm continuing to use app cache. It works great until I see otherwise. So performance, right? We got this C and C++ code. Let's see how it works inside the browser. So from this, I'm throwing a lot at you. This is from Unity, the popular middleware tool. Again, I'm highlighting games here because I want you to see a lot. So the green right here is Microsoft Edge with ASM, and this is from the Unity site. So if you go type in ASM plus Unity or Unity plus WebGL, they will give you this WebGL benchmark. And I can see right here, here's the score. So here's IE11. Again, we have some decent WebGL support in there, no ASM support. Microsoft Edge without this optimized JavaScript, and then Edge with it. So here's the overall score. Why don't you look at this first? So IE, not very good. So faster, higher is better, I should say. Edge without ASM, so a bit of an improvement. And then Edge with ASM, basically double what we have there. So we have double the performance right there. We're getting the same code. It's still JavaScript. It's just optimized JavaScript. So looking at some of the anomalies here, though, we have things like particles. So an IE, right? IE just, it's completely choking on particles over here. But these two are actually neck and neck. And I'll explain why in a short slide. But other stuff like Mandelbrot GPU. So Mandelbrot, like cool looking visualization. These are nearly identical across the board. And that's because it's using the GPU, right? That has nothing to do with JavaScript. It is all shader code that's leaving the single-threaded language, or JavaScript, and going directly to your graphics card. So if you're using the graphics card, man, you're getting, it doesn't look like it's good performance, but you're getting the same performance across the board. So you can go to the Unity website, and they have a WebGL benchmark where you can try all of these out on your device right now. So here is their WebGL benchmark, and they just updated this in December. It was interesting because I built this talk, and then every month or a few months, I go back to make sure everything's still up to date and correct. And I was looking at this website to make sure it was all still up to speed, and I hit refresh, and all of a sudden the whole website looked different. I'm like, what the hell? And they updated it that day, like a year to the date as I was looking at it. I'm like, wow, that's pretty wild. So I had to go back and rewrite a lot of this. But here we go, Unity WebGL. So like I said, we have this graphics library built into the browser now. It's the WebGL version of the desktop graphics library. And go on the bottom here, see IE, right? So we didn't really have good support for WebGL there. It's not really our goal at that point. But you go up a little bit, Chrome, good support. Firefox 32-bit version, okay, we're getting a little faster. Edge 12 with ASM enabled. Now we're getting really good performance. Then Firefox, the 64-bit version, we see a bit of a jump right here. And finally, Firefox, their latest version with shared array buffers. So shared array buffers, our feature are coming to a lot of the browsers now, and what that essentially allows you to do is perform the same operation on multiple bits of data. So if I'm going to essentially batch all of my addition instructions and all my multiplication instructions into a large call, send it out to the GPU, and then send it back. So shared array buffers, still very new, at least in the browser world. And you can see like huge performance improvements. So Chrome, I mean, Firefox with shared array buffers is essentially doubling the speed of Chrome. So people say, ah, JavaScript's slow. I point them towards this. And this was all done on different browsers. So the running Windows 10 machine with 3.3 gigahertz Core i7 CPU and an NVIDIA GTX 970. So this is nearly identical to the machine that I have at home. A 960, I'm sorry. I have a 970. So other than that, this is awesome. So remember before I had showed you Unity, how they can take C# and turn it into C and C++? So that was called IL2CPP. That's what it is, inline to C++, where they take your C# code, inline it, optimize it, and turn it into C++. So they started that on iOS first, and now it's on almost all the platforms now. They are like web development ninjas or programming ninjas at that company, Unity. Oh, did I click on something here? Uh-oh. No, don't die on me now. Oh, there we go. Okay, so some of the benchmarks I want to talk about. In benchmarks which stress WebGL, rendering performance such as particles, the asteroid field test, Edge performs the best of all tested browsers. That's what I like to hear. When you're mostly GPU bound, that is code that is talking directly to the graphics card, you can expect WebGL, so the web version of your application, to perform nearly identical to that of your compiled counterpart. Not bad. So if you can offload a lot of code, take away some of the JavaScript, and have it talk to the graphics card, you're getting essentially identical performance. That's wild. So in some areas, WebGL will actually outperform native code significantly. Not bad. And you think with all the overhead that you'd have inside of something like a browser, right? The virtual machine, the security sandbox, it's pretty fantastic that we're getting a lot of this performance out of there. So case study, Alchemy Labs. They have a game called where essentially you're just like falling through the sky, like a skydiver and going through all these objects. So the team at Alchemy Labs converted their game in 2014 and put together a great postmortem about the process. Again, all these slides are on my site. And I have links to everything inside of there. So if you want to see more of the details about this, I have it up there. So I put together a great postmortem about it. So let's look. 200 plus levels, 300 assets can be spawned at runtime. So that's pretty impressive. You can just generate all these things on the fly. It's largely because they're good programmers, right? They will cache a lot of this. They'll build these things during initialization when you're first building this application, disable them or disactivate them, tuck them away. So you already have that space allocated and you're just sitting on it. And then as soon as you need the objects, you're simply just flipping a Boolean and activating them. So that's one way of getting around this and having great performance. So 38 full-length songs, I'll tell you why I'm talking about all this, 1 million lines of JavaScript code. If you've written 10 lines of JavaScript, you know, it can be a project sometimes. Imagine reading 1 million lines of it. So the WebGL build with the Unity engine, right, because you've got to assume that people do not have the Unity engine with their PC. So WebGL with this entire game engine comes out to 68 megabytes. Not bad. Especially when you consider there's 38 full-length songs. What kind of compression are they using here? Holy cow. The PC build is 192 megabytes. So the web version, which performs identically, is smaller than the PC build. So exporting Unity. So you're going to create this application. Again, C#, spit out to JavaScript. With Unity, you hit a little button. It says preview here. This is an older image. It's no longer in preview. I can hit build and run. It's going to build this application, spit out an HTML file, and I'm ready to go. So I think it's like optimization level, right? Slow. So I really don't want to optimize. I just want a fast build, get it out the door. I could have development builds and auto-connect profiler, essentially for performance debugging. You're going to connect this. So what goes in must come out. So I have this C# application I'm writing. In the end, it's going to spit out an index.html, right? That's my main, my loading point of this application. A JavaScript file, so one file with all of your code. It has things like a mem file, data file, and some supporting JavaScript. And the mem file contains a binary image to initialize the heap memory for your player. So by player, they don't mean your game player. They mean the actual Unity player itself. Remember I said before that JavaScript, you're going to use like those floating 64-bit arrays, right? What they're doing here is that mem file is essentially saying, hey, I'm going to need this much binary space in RAM to have this application run. So it's going to create a huge block, give it to the CPU, and say, you figure out where you're going to put this space. So there are some missing features, right? There's never always benefits. There's trade-offs to everything. In this case, networking other than the WW class is not available. So support for webcam or microphone access, still not there, but these are things that are coming in the future. Although I don't know how many games are actually taking advantage of that to begin with. Threads, I mentioned before, single thread and application. Any .NET features requiring dynamic code generation. And then, not really important for most people, but runtime generation of substance textures. And substance textures are things that react both in terms of physics, but also look and feel based on the substance you're passing on it. So I might have a metallic substance that I'm applying to it, right? And if I go to throw something, a metallic substance, you would expect, if it's hard at least, that you hear like a tinny sound, a ding, and you think a coin or a ball would bounce really far. If I have a liquid substance, it would behave accordingly too. The physics would react in that regard. So in conclusion for this, the advantages of porting to C++ and C or to JavaScript are clear. So often a smaller package size, demonstrated that. Easily demo or share projects on the web. And you can reuse a lot of your existing code. So I got this slide from Brandon Ike again. This is from Passenger 57, Wesley Snipes. Right? Always bet on JavaScript. So first they said JavaScript couldn't be useful for building rich internet apps. Right? That was in the 90s. Like, oh, this is never going to happen. And look what happened. Then they said it couldn't be fast. I think I showed you it's pretty fast. I haven't gotten to the examples and demos yet, so this thing's not over yet. Then they said it couldn't be fixed. That's debatable. Even today, right, we have the latest version of JavaScript released last year. And from what I understand, it's going to be on a yearly cadence now. I don't know if it's so much fixed. Right? We have classes in it and all these other things now. It's more like syntactic sugar, right? A lot of it. Do you really need classes in JavaScript? Probably not, right? We did C for years, and there's just objects there. There's no sense of classes in it. And especially when you understand prototypal inheritance in JavaScript and the power behind it, you'll realize maybe I don't need classes, right? You don't need to shoehorn something in. You're just trying to take something like an object-oriented language like C++ and C or C sharp and get it into JavaScript, which is functional and very, very different way of thinking. So people are wrong every time. So his advice, as well as mine, always bet on JavaScript, right? It is the tool, the platform at least, that works everywhere. So again, many more references for this. Alon Zakai at Kripken is his handle and also his GitHub name. He has some fantastic videos I would encourage you to take a look at over several of his talks over the last few years. So many of the much of the content I got here was from him, from his work, other research that I could do along the way. So we're not done just yet. I have 56 minutes in this presentation, but we still have a little bit of time. How much time is left, do you know? 14 minutes. I'll have about 6 minutes to show you some demos. How's that sound? Good? Cool. All right. I didn't put anyone to sleep yet, so that's good. So some of these demos I may have started off and shown you before. If I did, I apologize. Again, if you go to my site, just type in Dave Voiles plus mscripten. I have this tutorial that's on SitePoint and a whole bunch of other places where I go through everything I did here, as well as like the step-by-step process, how to install this, how to get going. I have images along the way, updating the SDK, all of the code. And I updated this about 2 months ago. They changed like one or two things here and there. There's even an update somewhere in here. But if you want to try this out, I mean, you can knock it out in like 15, 20 minutes and you'll be flying. But what I do want to show you is like good performance on the web. So score rush, multiplayer. So this is from two friends, Canadian buddies, one of whom works or just left Amazon. I'm going to unzoom here. They were making this game in C sharp for the Xbox 360, and they ported it over to JavaScript. They rewrote it from scratch using this framework called Turbulence. And this guy later on went to go work at Amazon to help lead their games team. So this is all JavaScript code. He had never used this language before. He just was very good at assembly, C, C++. And when the opportunity came to work on this, he said, yeah, sure, I'll try it out. So this game is also coming out on PlayStation 4 later this year. They just finished it. So I'm going to create game. So this is using the graphics card here. I'm getting silky smooth 60 frames a second. And you see, we have shaders going on too. And shaders are essentially little applications or functions running inside of the graphics card. And that's what gives me that little ripple effect in the ground. See how it looks like I have water, I'm kind of like bouncing over? So here's a little boss. You can see all these colors changing, these particles drawing. And three other people can hop in and play this with me right now. And we're all going to have 60 frames a second the entire time. I can set that off. I can set another bomb. Get all my little guys back. Flies the entire time. So again, when people say, oh, the browser is so slow, I think, wait a minute. That looks pretty fast to me. If your line of business app needs to go that fast, you let me know. I would love to help you out and help work on that. We can look at other things like Sony PS4, WebGL. So from SiliconANGLE, WebGL graphics technology powers the Sony PlayStation 4. So this was also, they used a lot of JavaScript on PlayStation 3 as well. I worked at Comcast and I was building an application for Xbox 360, One, and the PlayStation 3 and 4. And they have their own JavaScript framework at Sony. It's called Trilithium. And for PS4, they added a WebGL component for it. So what they did, there's a great talk on all of this by Don Olmsted. And again, if you look up my name plus WebGL, I have tons of information about this talk and everything else. So Don Olmsted, this gentleman right here, gave this great talk about WebGL. And this was a few years ago at the San Francisco Developers Meetup Group. So he explains how they're betting on WebGL and this high-performance JavaScript, even on the PlayStation 4. So what they did was they took the code from their store, sony.store.ps4.com, grab all that code and just lifted it, brought it to the PS4. So now when you're buying games on the PS4, you're doing it all through a WebGL interface. You have no idea. And that's what's happening the entire time. So rather than write it specifically for each and every platform, they can take this and port it everywhere. So they're banking on it. We're banking on it. We have Babylon.js, great open source WebGL framework. This is done by also some folks at Microsoft. So anyone can contribute to this. You can use this right now. If you go to Xbox.com and you go to the Avatar Marketplace, let me see, this one's not going to work. I got to figure out how to get actually back to my avatar. Let's see if I can. Oh, I'd have to sign in. Maybe it'll work. I'll try my guy real quick. My character is WebGL. It used to be a plugin that we required. Now, let's check this out. No. Did I go the wrong way? This Mac is super sensitive. Yeah, there's my dude. That's my guy. So that is WebGL running inside the browser. It's just a little frame that I have. So I can say, oh, let me try out this outfit. The emotionally unavailable hoodie. And if the internet works, it'll give me something. Oh, maybe there we go. Check out my sweet pants. I'm not quite sure how to change outfits. I don't really play on here that often. But it shows you the kind of things you can get in here. And finally, let's look at things like, these are all actually pretty neat demos. I can visualize the startup scene in Czechoslovakia. I can go to the Dolby experiment. I really like this one because, again, this is for Dolby, created by Plain Concepts, but it's running on our WebGL framework. And what it allows me to do is I can look around this room and get a feel for what's happening. I can see this Enrique Iglesias concert. I can go over here and see Prometheus running on the big screen, as well as everything that's included with it. So, yep, so you know what? I don't have Edge on this, obviously. I guess it does work now. It used to not work in Chrome. But now what I can do is I can check out Prometheus, that newish Aliens movie, inside of the browser, right? So people can get a look and a feel and experience for what some of this is doing. And best of all, final thing, we'll say Unreal Engine YouTube architecture. I had this in the demo. I don't know what I did with it. So I point back to a lot of this architecture stuff because this is what I was doing before I joined Microsoft. I was building high-end spaces in Manhattan as a contractor. And we were selling it to very, very wealthy people and celebrities, so multi-million dollar places. And I would have to show them CAD drawings and say, oh, visualize how awesome your $15 million place is going to look. But now I could build this in something like Unreal Engine, that's what this is, and I can have somebody put on the headset, right, VR, whether it's Oculus or Vive, whatever it is you want to use. And I can just give them a link to this. I can text them this message, a link to this project. They can put on their headset when they get home or whatever else. And now they're in this world walking around. Or I can text it to them on their phone and they can try all of this out. So I can share the visualization for something that I'm trying to perhaps sell someone on or build the idea of. And they can test this out from any device. So again, it's not limited to just games. We see 60 frames a second. Imagine if you could pitch this kind of material to prospects or clients or people who are thinking about working with you. So that is my pitch for the browser, how fast it can be, everything that's available to you today.